How much freedom do we want journalists to have in the future, more or less than they have now? There is a perpetual tug of war between publishers and journalists and governments and the courts, and to a lesser extent, the rest of us who witness the media's successes and transgressions. The context these days is partly the pressure on governments to tighten national security, including from terrorists and cyber attacks, with journalists, like the rest of us, losing freedoms in the process. But also, the publishers can less afford to fight for journalists' freedoms, having lost advertising revenue to the digital giants, Google and Facebook. On these topics, in this fifth episode of the Future of Journalism series, Lorena Alec represents one voice for the traditional publishers. A media lawyer, she's executive counsel at Nine, so providing legal advice for journalists at its newspapers, the Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, The Australian Financial Review, and other news outlets. So, Lorena, are you an optimist or pessimist when it comes to the future of journalism?
I'm afraid I'm a pessimist, but I'm a lawyer, so I always have to be.
And why are you a pessimist?
I've seen too many patterns lately, especially when it comes to media law, to hold out much hope that things are getting better before they, like at the moment, they're going to get a lot worse before they get better, I'm afraid. My first thought is about defamation law, as I'm sure any media lawyer would be thinking of that immediately, but also privacy law, which is something I'd like to talk about with you today.
And what are the, well, let's go straight to privacy. What are the issues?
At the moment, there's no official right to privacy under Australian law. People kind of assume that there is, but the privacy legislation, the Privacy Act, is actually about more to do with personal data, personal information, like medical records and telephone numbers and addresses that we collect off customers, that kind of personal information being kept private and being dealt with in a very careful way by the big corporations that collect that data. But we don't have a right to privacy itself, and that's something that comes up in immediate conflict with journalism.
And are you saying there should be a right to privacy or less right to privacy?
I do not want to see a right to privacy being brought into the laws of Australia, because I think it will only have a detrimental effect overall. And while that's probably a bit controversial, because I mean, everyone thinks it sounds like a nice idea and it's a human right. The fact is that we don't have a problem that needs to be fixed. We don't have a major sort of attack on privacy that needs to be resolved with legislation right now. What we would have, if that right is brought in purely, you know, on sort of the sort of philosophical grounds, is we don't have a counter argument in favour of the right of the public to know the news and the right for journalists to engage in investigative journalism. That's not a right entrenched anywhere in our laws either.
But where's the pressure to increase the right to privacy? I just don't see that momentum.
There's been law reform reports every few years for about a decade. And these reports keep coming out at state and federal level, recommending that legislation be passed to create a personal right of privacy in Australia. And that can then be litigated upon, because the way you enforce that right is by suing the people who breach your rights. And in this case, without doubt, that will be the mainstream media in Australia.
So give me an example of a right to privacy that you think that is an issue.
The Australian example that comes to mind is that of Barnaby Joyce and his relationship with a staffer, which by all reports at the time was an extramarital affair. Now, that was not reported while Mr. Joyce was running for re-election. It was only run after he'd secured his seat. And by then, in effect, the public's interest in knowing that information and making its voting decisions based on that information had been taken from them.
Yeah, but I would see that as an unhealthy relationship between the Canberra paparazzi and the politicians.
And I wouldn't argue with you about that. But I think what's important is that if there was a right to privacy that was engaged in that issue, and if, you know, if this same incident had happened in 5 years' time, when we have that kind of privacy rights in play, we couldn't run that story at all.
Yeah, but so there was controversy and people were saying it should never have been run. Some people were saying, but my guess was that the majority of people were in favour of exposing that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that's something that those people should have been told and should have been told sooner.
Well, I didn't see any pressure on, any real pressure on changing the legislation there.
No, because at the time the focus was on, I think, on the bonk ban that the Prime Minister then brought in and all the media surrounding that, which was all rather amusing. But when it comes to a privacy right, when it comes to people's private, personal, you know, romantic relationships, that privacy right will absolutely attach to those situations and will stop the media from reporting on that. And not just as a matter of taste or a matter of timing or a matter of decorum, it will be a legal block on journalists reporting on private misconduct by public figures.
So,
now, in America, they don't have that problem.
Right. So let's look at another case. Let's look at the case of Christian, the allegation or the story that Four Corners did that included Christian Porter and delved into way back into his university days as a way of... a lot of people saw it as way of rubbing his nose in his past unfairly.
Yeah, and arguably, if there was a right of privacy entrenched in the law, Mr. Porter would have, the Attorney General would have a right to say, I had a reasonable expectation of privacy in that situation. So the media cannot report on it. If they do report on it, I can sue them. I can get an injunction to stop them reporting that story. If they publish it before I get an injunction, I can then get substantial damages out of them. And what that then does is have a chilling effect over all other reporting of misconduct like that. I mean, heaven help us if the privacy laws in Australia had been in place before the Me Too movement, because I can guarantee you the Me Too movement wouldn't have happened at all in this country. We barely had one in Australia because of our defamation laws. But if we had a privacy law as well, stifling reporting on those kinds of what are effectively private incidents, we wouldn't have any kind of the reporting or any of the reforms that we're seeing now.
So a case that illustrates your point might be the Cliff Richards case in Britain. Can you take us through that quickly?
Yeah, sure. So that was an extraordinary situation. Yeah. So there was a police investigation involving Cliff Richards, the British pop star, singer, celebrity for historical child abuse. That involved a raid on his mansion in country England and was covered by the BBC as in cooperation with the local police. Cliff Richards sued the police and the BBC for breaching his right of privacy. The police settled. We don't know the terms of that settlement deal, but the BBC fought it all the way to trial on principle, and the BBC lost. The court held that Cliff Richards' privacy rights were more important than reporting the news of a police investigation into him.
Okay, so what you're arguing is that the future of journalism includes much more restriction on what the legislation and the courts will allow journalists to publish.
That's right.
What would you like to see?
I think there has to be entrenched in those kinds of laws a public interest test, or a public interest defence, which allows journalism, media, anyone facing these kinds of claims to have a defence if what they're publishing is overall serving the public interest. And that is the old adage that it's not about what's interesting to the public, it's about what is in the public interest. And that's a test which sounds great in theory, but as we've seen repeatedly in defamation law, the judges simply do not uphold those defences. It is very difficult to get a public interest defence across the line. And that's either because there's always criticism of how a journalist prepared a story, regardless of how important it was to the public to receive that news. And often we see, judges sitting in the seat of the editor and saying, well, I wouldn't have reported it this way. So your defence fails. It's an extraordinary situation for us in what should be our best defence. And I know the Alliance for Journalist Freedom has put forward some legislation to support journalist rights and what the work that journalists do. And I think that's an important step towards getting those kinds of protections in place. Because what we don't have at the moment, what we are suffering from, is a vacuum of protection for journalists. And we see time and time again that media companies face massive payouts, sometimes in the millions of dollars, for doing what they are effectively their role in society is to do, which is to report on the news and disclose information.
So how do you sell this to an electorate that largely doesn't think journalists deserve more freedoms, or in fact that the existing freedoms they've got are liberal enough?
Yeah, I think we've had a real sort of failure on the media and journalists' part to advocate for ourselves, to advocate for the importance of what the media does and what investigative journalism particularly is capable of. I mean, we've seen incredible stories be broken in the last few years about Crown Casino, about bank fees for no service, about aged care and its failures to look after our elderly, about institutional responses to child abuse. Those have all led to parliamentary inquiries and royal commissions. These are important parts of journalists' work that actually leads to access to justice in this country and improves our community as a whole. And we don't advocate for that. Journalists don't like being part of the story and they don't advocate for the importance of what they do.
Okay, so let's look at a couple of specifics. Should the George Pell case have been held in secret?
I have a real problem with the Pell case, partly because there were going to be two trials and it's established law and it does make sense that if you have two separate trials, you can't report on the first trial until the second trial is complete, which is what you put suppression orders in place to do. But we never had a second trial with Cardinal Pell. And as it turns out, he was convicted, but then later acquitted by the High Court. But there's this issue where that whole first trial was not covered. And the details are sketchy at best that we've been able to give to the public.
So should it have been covered?
I think so, yes. I think there was a significant public interest in it. And the allegations were so serious that this was an instance where the decision to split the case into two separate trials should have taken into account what the effect of that would be. And my argument would be there should never have been two trials.
Okay.
If it had been one trial, we never would have had this whole problem.
Let's look at another one. The Bernard Collaery case is a case concerning a lawyer who has defended a spy, an Australian spy, who bugged a cabinet room in Timor-Leste. Should that be public in the public domain or not?
That is a case that absolutely needs to be covered. And the problem is there is suppression of that case that means we can't cover it in proper detail. And there are always national security arguments and national security issues that the judge has to take into account. I understand that. But when it comes to our own government prosecuting its own staff for doing what we understand they were instructed to do, and their lawyers being dragged into it as well, it's an extraordinary situation. And there's always going to be this concern that the reason why we're not being allowed to report on it is because the details are going to be embarrassing to the government. That is always a case, that's always a reason for publication, not against it. But the argument at the moment is it's going to embarrass the government so you can't report on it.
The other argument, and as you know, we actually don't know what the arguments are in the Bernard Collaery case because it is suppressed. But the other argument is if we start talking about our own spies' secrets, we're going to undermine our own security.
Yeah. I think the answer is because we are a country where transparency is more important than secrecy, and that secrecy is the scourge of any community, of any government, of any sort of society. Everything that, every sort of example of wrongdoing usually starts with some secrecy. And I think that transparency, holding ourselves accountable for, as a government, for what we've done, is far more important than any embarrassment we might get, or comparing ourselves to secretive governments and saying, well, they wouldn't do it, so we shouldn't either. That's exactly the opposite. We should be better than that. And I think we've sort of found that America is not quite the shining example it used to be for these kinds of transparency issues. We need to step up. England, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, you know, the old Commonwealth countries with their very old Commonwealth values about transparency and checks and balances. And the media is part of that. Journalism's always been a part of that. If we don't let journalism do its role, then secrecy just spreads and wrongdoing follows shortly after.
Let's change topic and look at Google and Facebook and battle that the publishers, the traditional publishers, are having to make Google and Facebook pay for content. There's a line of thinking that forcing Google and Facebook to pay for content is in effect a tax on innovation, because the publishers were too lazy and left the door open for people like Google and Facebook to enter the digital world and lead the digital world, where the opportunity was there for you, for News Limited, for the New York Times, and so on.
Yeah, and if we could just leave everything to the free market idea, that'd be great and really easy and a really simple answer. But what we've seen that result in now is just the erosion of the value of news in a digital economy, where every one of these, you know, major media outlets has to fight to survive. We are certainly relying more and more on our digital output in terms of the 9 newspapers. Even our broadcasts are always online. I'll admit it's taken us a while to get that kind of flexibility and get on board. But that, at the same time, there's an importance to local news that if that's lost, we can't get it back.
Well, the argument is that we're simply keeping the dinosaurs alive a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I'm very happy to be working for those dinosaurs. There's nothing that gives me more joy than picking up a newspaper in the morning and holding it in my hands, and I will fight for that as long as I live. But at the same time, I also consume digital media, and most of our readers do. And so we are trying to provide our content on all the platforms that people want it on. That's all we sort of can do as a provider. And if we keep our standards of journalism high, the readers come to us. But there are consequences to the way these things are structured. There are consequences for how local news can be produced and be funded, because the fact is, even though, you know, I wish this was a public service, it's not. I think one of the real tragedies in the last year is the closure of local newspapers around the country and the real sort of the disappearance of a lot of local newspapers. And while they have gone online, the content generation is just disappearing. And from my work with regional newspapers in the past, there is no one better to hold a local council to account than a local newspaper. We all know what local councils are like, and I have absolutely no doubt that corruption will run rife through every local council that doesn't have a newspaper watching it. And because we've seen it over and over and over again.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Peter.